All right, James, it has been a minute, but we are back for the jump off. It's a song that you probably remember. But anyway, how are you?
Is that like Van Halen, Jump, that song?
That is Lil' Kim.
Oh, huh? Okay. I know who Lil' Kim is. Yeah, I don't know that song though.
Did not think we would ever mention Lil' Kim on the podcast, but hey.
Did you miss me?
Anything is possible. I did, for sure. There's so much to talk about, and usually, obviously, we talk like in messaging and all that stuff. But it's nice to have a conversation once a week where we kind of get to delve into this stuff. But how was your little mini break?
It was good. Yeah, I went and I visited Mickey Mouse and emptied my pockets and paid my duty to Disney World, which is kind of what you have to do when you're a dad sometimes.
100%. It's great. We're happy that you did it, but we're glad you're back. We have lots to talk about. We're going to get to some questions in the pod bag a bit later. I know you've been kind of following along, even though you're away, what's been going on with the Leafs. Is there anything you want to know or anything that's on your mind right off the top before we delve into some of the topics that got laid out for us?
Yeah. So I've gone back and I've been watching the games and I've been kind of like out of the zeitgeist of like the day-to-day commentary and stuff like that for, you know, the 8 days I was gone, but I've watched the games. And you know what, where I would want to start, Jonas, is like, where are you on how the team is playing over, let's say, the last 2-3 weeks? Where are you in terms of like how good and or bad do you feel about where the Leafs are at right now?
James, I got to tell you, we are like prime Mark Giordano and TJ Brody. We're just on the same page. That's first on the list. That's
what I want to talk about.
I love it. So obviously, what you're referring to, I think, is there's been some angst, I think, about some of the, not, I guess you would say, results, underlying results with the way that this team has been performing basically since they made the trades, and really since they made the trades on D and started changing their lineup constantly. So, I mean, Sheldon Keefe was asked about this the other day and basically said, like, we've beaten some really good teams and, like, basically, there's not really anything to be angsty about. I'm not quite there. Like I think there is some stuff to be concerned with, not overly concerned, but they haven't played especially well. Territorially, for the most part, they've lost a lot of nights and they've managed to win on some of those nights, which is fine. Like your job is to win, but like you even go back a couple games to that game they played in Ottawa, where they give up 52 shots, and I think possession was like 36%, something like that. And like you look since they added McCabe and Lafferty, which is when kind of the real change started. Obviously, before that is O'Reilly and Achari. But then you add four more new players into that mix, and like they've been near the bottom of the league in a lot of underlying categories.
So
that's not like this team. So that's something. Right.
I've got the numbers on that. So their record since they've added, they've only played 11 games since they've added McCabe. So we're talking about an 11 game sample size. They're 6-4-1 after beating Florida last night. Possession, they're at 47%, which is, do the math here, 21st in the league. And then if you go to, I'm going to scroll over here. some good radio here. If you go to measures that incorporate shot quality, expected goals, they are at, let me scroll down, 44% in that time frame, which is ahead of only a few other teams. That's 28th in the league. Now it's 11.
Yeah, it's not great.
It's 11 games, but they're near the bottom of the league in some of the metrics that we normally like to look at to measure where the team's at.
So what do you make of that? Because obviously, the initial thing is like, did they make their team worse at the trade deadline by adding more of these, I don't know, playoff type players who aren't maybe as skilled? Like, do you think that that's legitimate or do you think that's overblown? Where do you sit on
that? I mean, I think 11 games is too early to... The other thing too is that like, yeah, they added six players, but look how like Shen's been gone, O'Reilly's been hurt. Like it's been a real scramble with like who's even been in the lineup. So
yes,
you know, you make these big trades and you move Sandin. And I mean, part of it too, I think, is that Sandin puts up a lot of points. Engvall's playing, I think he's been playing on the Islanders' first line some games, right? Like it, know, and that's getting headlines in other places. You know, they trade away two guys that have been with the team for a long time. You add some new players and you don't have success right away. And it makes sense that people are talking about it, but I do think it's a little bit overblown right now.
So we can dig into it a little bit more, because I don't think it's just the fact that they've added new players and that the results haven't been there. It's that you're kind of touching on it, but they haven't dressed like much consistently night to night to night to night. Like the lines have been changing constantly. The defense obviously has changed constantly. Like there's really been no continuity, and Keith kind of brushed that off as like, again, like pointing to the wins and like that being like kind of letting them off the hook for how they've performed at times. And I get why you might need to send that message publicly to kind of tell the players that this is not something that you can use an excuse, but I just don't see how that isn't part of the conversation here. The fact that literally like every night the defense is changing, like there are different pairs and like even the minutes are changing drastically night to night. Like Timothy Liljegren played less than 11 minutes in Florida. A few nights before that, he played 23 in Ottawa. Like it's so you're changing roles, you're changing minutes, you're changing partners. The lines have not been set. Like you look at most of those combinations, they haven't really worked. At least in terms of some of the underlying numbers, like Yarncroke, Matthews, Marner, the numbers were pretty good in Florida. They hadn't been great before that. Like, I don't know. Like, I don't know how you can say that that's not a factor when you change so much of your team and then you're constantly changing the lineup every single night. Like, how can it not be a factor, you know?
It was the biggest concern for me when you see how many trades they made and how many new players they brought into the lineup, and they're subtracting players. And while they're subtracting, you know, a third pair defenseman and a third line winger, there's still guys that have been in your dressing room a long time and have generated chemistry. Like Sandin had good chemistry with Timothy Liljegren. Engvall had good chemistry with David Kampf. It's just, it takes players time to get there. It's not just like a video game where you make like the trade and then you're ready to go. And if the player has a higher rating, it's going to work right away. So, you know, they've got 11 games left. And I think that now's the time where they're going to have to settle on a lineup and just really dial in on it. And they've kind of run out of time for experimenting, especially with how dire the underlying numbers are. You know, so I've looked it up player by player. The only player in expected goals who's above 50% is Austin Matthews, and he's at 50.1. And everyone else is, I mean, the other one is Ryan O'Reilly, but he's only played three games in the window we're talking about since they added Jake McCabe and the others. But then you look down the list at who's struggling. You know, Morgan Riley and TJ Brody are under 40%. Like, you're not going to win a lot of games with your first pair D under 40% in terms of scoring chance share. Even Marner's number is low. And Marner's, you watch the games, he's playing really well. But territorially, the Leafs just, well, we haven't seen them struggle like this, I think, in terms of the scoring chance share and things like that. Can you think of another 10 game stretch where they've been this low? It's been a long time.
I mean, even October when they weren't playing particularly well, it wasn't like this. Like I can pull it up really quickly, but I like it wasn't this. It wasn't like, man, like they're bottom of the league in some of these things. Let's see for October. So for October, yeah, they're 51% almost. 13th in the league in expected goals.
Yeah. At that time they were losing games. We were saying, well, at least like there's like some signs of life and they're not getting, you know, but here like the record's okay, but the underlying numbers are terrible. And it's like, I don't know. It's something that they're going to have to get fixed.
Well, they haven't been generating a ton of offense. Their key guys really haven't generated a ton of offense. Obviously Matthews gets the two goals. Tavares and Nylander haven't been nearly as impactful. But one thing that does concern me a little bit, and Keith talked about this in Florida, it feels to me a little bit like they're prioritizing these worst case scenarios. Like he brought up the fact that you want to have like these defensemen like involved and having played just in case you need them for injury. in the playoffs, and that's fair. But it feels like in some ways they're prioritizing that over building continuity with the guys that they're actually going to use.
Well, normally now, what you do, Jonas, if you want to mix these guys in, is you just switch out a third pair guy and put in another third pair guy, and you don't change everything.
Yes. Yeah, and so that's what I was thinking. Like I was talking to Josh about this. Every third game or something, every fourth game, you could just put Shen in and put Gustafson in, but they're constantly changing. And I do find it very odd. And it was kind of just something Keith brought up, and that was the end of it, that they rested Morgan Rielly in Florida. Like that's unusual. I've not seen that. Obviously they have a lot of defensemen. So and they're trying, like he said, to keep people involved, but Morgan Rielly is I kind of put in a different bracket, obviously. And he's starting to feel good. He's playing well. And here's the other thing, James. They have a day off today when we're recording this on Friday. Then they play a back-to-back. Yeah. So is Rielly now going to play both games in a back-to-back when you rested him in Florida? It doesn't really make sense.
Well, if he rested one of the back-to-back games, it would be more that feels more like load management, doesn't it?
Right. So I just think everything they're doing is a little weird.
There's a few possibilities. Either Riley's playing a bit banged up, right? Sometimes that you get quote unquote healthy scratched in that situation, mm-hmm. or they're not happy with the way he's playing. I mean, looking at, I'm just eye test and the numbers are all, you can see why that potentially might be, or it's at face value that they're just trying to give some other guys more ice time. But I don't know.
Yeah. I just think it's weird.
The playoffs are close, though. It's coming fast.
That's exactly it, James. It's so far away. And now maybe these final, they play, you said 11 games. Maybe after this weekend, that's when they'll really kind of start getting down to, what's the saying, brass tacks? Is that the right phrasing, James?
I believe so, yes.
Okay. Well, and so obviously a big part of that is eventually getting Ryan O'Rielly back and plugging him in. But I don't know. I don't like the fact that you look at their lineup and you're like, what's good right now? What are they leaning on? I don't know. Now there are 10 games to figure that out. So that's not nothing. I don't know what this is all about. It's a lot of new players. And it's a lot of new combinations. I don't know if that's it. And a lot of guys are struggling. The guys who were here before, Michael Bunting is struggling, Tavares, Nylander, a lot of Liljegren is suddenly struggling a bit. Obviously you mentioned Rielly, there's not a lot of guys one of the combinations that they kind of have used a bunch in the past couple weeks, Kampf, Aston Reese, and Achari, the numbers for that are not particularly good. They don't actually generate anything offensively that measures.
Aston Reese is last on the whole team in terms of, the scoring chance share and things like that. He's at 33% right now.
Yeah.
It's interesting, a guy like that scores a couple of goals and then people, the narrative around him changes a little bit, but then you they're spending a lot of time in their own end.
I did want to touch on the goalies. Where are you at with this whole situation? Because Matt Murray is suddenly looking pretty good. Now, obviously, TBD if he can stay healthy the rest of the way, TBD if he can keep playing like this. But I believe that this is more open than the consensus. Every time I listen to radio or do radio or watch TV, it's Ilya Samsonov is going to be the starter for now. And I just don't think that can be determined yet. I just think there's too much time. What do you think?
Well, normally I wouldn't put any substance at all in the home road splits stuff, but do you think there's anything, do you think there's anything to Samsonov's home record is so good. Maybe you're just game one, he starts. And if he's bad, then Murray comes in.
I'm glad you brought that up because in some ways, that seems insane. And yet, I don't totally know how you'd ignore it, right? If he's 18, right now he's 18-2-2 at home. And let's say his record is amazing. Do you just put that aside when Matt Murray hasn't been great at home and has been really good on the road?
I don't know. That could inform how you start the series, right? It kind of looks like the Leafs are going to get home ice now. They're 5 points up. They've got, two games in hand on Tampa. Tampa's been also struggling. They lost 7-2 to Ottawa on Thursday with their backup in net. But if the Leafs get home ice, game one, I think you start Samsonov. He's been so good. But you asked about the battle and whatever. I mean, the door's opening a little bit more and more when Murray plays well.
Yes. Especially with the history that he has. Like, I just have a hard time believing that they're... I mean, yeah, like, I don't know, James. Like, I still think that they would prefer him to be the guy, but, like, how do you just ignore what Samsonov has done? Like, he's been very consistent the whole year. Like, in that... It's funny, like, that was not his reputation coming here. Like, that, it was the opposite.
Fluto has a story, our Bruins writer, about Boston going into the playoffs prepared to use a tandem. You know, they've been using it. They've been trading off Swayman and Allmark, like, basically every game lately, and it's been working for them. So, you know, I've beaten that drum on this podcast many times that I think that at some point the NHL is going to go, it's going to become maybe more like a pitcher where you have like a rotation with goalies. Like, I think that's going to happen at some point, unless you've got a Vasilevsky. So I think that you go in likely with Samsonov in game one, if it's a home game and it's a real short leash and you're not afraid to go to Murray if you need to.
Yeah. I don't think that's crazy. It's going to be interesting to see how this plays out.
What's the last playoffs they went into, Jonas, where you felt good about playing either goalie? Like, I mean, that's like, if we want to, we should probably talk about this, like, maybe in a positive light that both guys are playing well right now.
Yeah, that's fair. Yeah, it's a good point. I mean, you still have, there's still gigantic question marks. Like, let's be real. Like, as much as they've had, or Samsonov especially has had a good year, and Murray's been hurt for large chunks of the year and played okay. But, like, all bets are off, right? Like, who knows? Especially when you're going against Samsonov, right?
How do you think they're going to split the starts this weekend?
Well, Samsonov isn't with the team because his wife is pregnant. So I would think Murray on Saturday and then Joseph Woll on Sunday.
Yeah, makes sense. I just wondered if Samsonov was going to be back in time. But yeah, maybe. There's been a lot of babies lately. Like, how many, like, Shen with the baby, Samsonov, Lafferty? Am I forgetting someone? That's... If we dial back 9 months from now, where were the Leafs at? Is that like a training camp baby or something like that?
I don't know.
I guess it's like summer.
But yeah, that's the one big wild card going to that series is like, can their goaltending be good enough? Like, it's hard to see their goalies outplaying Vasilevsky. Like, obviously it's not impossible, but if they can just be not losing you a game and just kind of being fine, they really, like, they haven't won a goalie matchup in a playoff series in this era.
I mean, unless you want to make the argument that, like, I mean, Reimer's numbers in 2013 were good.
Oh boy. let's take a break. And then what is on my, I want to talk a little bit about Austin Matthews. I want to talk a little bit about the defense. And if you want to talk about Matthew Nyes, we can. Let's take a break.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Okay, James. So while you were gone, Austin Matthews has started to heat up. Like, he's starting to look more like Austin Matthews. Like, he's not at the level he was at last year. We had talked about it many, 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 many times on the podcast. What was going on with Austin Matthews? We found out he was dealing with a hand injury, among other things, I think, that have bothered him throughout the year. But the fact that he's starting to look a little bit more like himself this time of year, I think, is such a big deal. And obviously you haven't been here, so we haven't talked about it. What do you think the significance of that is? And what do you think of where they kind of go with their lineup with the way he's playing, the way he's fit with Mitch Marner? Anything that comes to your mind, go.
Well, I saw that he scores that second goal against Florida, and it's like, okay, yeah. You know, it's like, he's back. You know, he looks like he did last year. When was it that you talked to him for the story about the injury?
So it was after, it was on a Sunday. So that would have been, it was after a Saturday game that they played against.
And good old Sunday availability where there's not very much media there and you can, you can have a conversation with someone.
So that was after the day after, I guess that was the Buffalo game, maybe?
Like 2 weeks ago, right?
Yeah, something like that.
Okay, so 2 weeks ago, and he says to you, you know, this is what I've been dealing with. This is, you know, it's limited me in most of the season, but I feel better now, is basically what he said, right? And then you look at his production in that now period where he says he feels back to normal, and it's like, yeah, it looks pretty much back to normal. Like I said, he's leading the team in the possession metrics, scoring chances, on ice, you know, everything. But also, you know, he's got, I believe it's 6 goals and 12 points in the last 8 games. Like he's kind of the production, the shot, his confidence with the puck, it all looks a lot more like last season than we've seen most of this year.
Yeah. And that's bang on, James. And like you look at the number of shots he's getting, like he's got 50 shots in his last 10 games.
Hmm.
Like that's more like Matthews. Like he averaged, like, I think he averaged almost 5 shots a game last year, or it was well over 4. Yeah, that's the thing that, go ahead.
How specific did he get with the injury? Like a hand injury? I mean, I guess that's, do you know which hand he hurt? Did he talk about it?
No.
Because it kind of looked like he wasn't shooting as much. He didn't have confidence. Like I part of what the technique of how Auston Matthews shoots like Auston Matthews is, it's just a pure power move where he's using the flexion in the stick with his upper body strength and his lower body strength. And just like, so if you can't do that, then you can't shoot the same way with the same velocity and everything. And it makes sense why he was either missing the net or turning down looks that he would have easily buried a year ago, that it had to do with his hand and the way that he uses the stick. And it also explains why he's been putting up so many assists and passing the puck so much more this year.
Yeah, that's a good point. Well, it's just like, James, like, remember there were points in the year, even like when you and I would watch a game together, and it's like, man, like he can't handle the puck. Like, remember last year at points, like when he would handle the puck, it was like, this feels like a video game. Like he's just going around people. It's like literally the puck is like tied to it, his stick. That's how much control he has over it. And that just wasn't there. And that's literally what I said to him. Like, I thought he was shooting the puck like normal. Like there was a one time where he had, it was in the Edmonton game. It was after the Edmonton game, I believe, where he just loaded up like fully and like just let it rip. And like, I hadn't seen much of that throughout the year. It started to come back when they were on the road out west. But yeah, it's like, it's just such a big deal for them if he's feeling more like himself, because like their chances of beating Tampa, if he's at whatever, 70%, are just, it's hard to see it being enough.
Well, it's good timing that he's where he's at when he's there. If that makes sense. Yeah. Like it's finally he's back to, we've been waiting all year. Like I think we had one story where it's like Auston Matthews is, you know, he's on his way back to what he's going to be like in mid season.
And that was
just,
me.
And then, yeah, I know. And then it just, I wasn't going to throw you under the bus.
But. No, it's okay. I'll own it. Like, honestly, James, like you remember, like and we've written about this now at The Athletic. I'm not sure if it's up yet, but just like revisiting our preseason predictions. And I predicted he would score 70 goals. And obviously that's like a bold prediction. Like nobody scores 70. Maybe McDavid will get there this year, but it's like, he looked like someone who could score 70 goals. And then what you don't anticipate is like, well, what happens if like he's hurt the entire season and just playing through injuries and not himself? And this is kind of what you've got. Like he's still probably going to get to 40. He's got 34 with 11 to play, so he probably gets to 40. But I think what's been interesting is seeing him healthy again and then seeing him back with Mitch Marner. Like all of a sudden they look like they did for the most part, like the last couple of years, which is encouraging. But the downside is Nylander and Tavares, I don't really see it. Like that's a little worrisome for me. And I wonder where you fall on the where should Ryan O'Reilly play conversation, because it starting to feel like maybe he's going to end up as the third center. again, like how they start.
Why do you say that? Why do you say it feels like he's going to be at the third line center? Like, what are the indications that are saying that to you?
The indications are just some of the combinations that Sheldon Keefe has kind of been rolling out, where he's kind of been leaving that at times, that third line empty, where he'll just kind of rotate wingers in. So like a few games, it was Kerfoot and Lafferty, and you could easily see Ryan O'Reilly just sliding into that place. Now, maybe I'm reading too much into that. Obviously, Tavares has remained at center. When you lose O'Reilly, like you kind of need Tavares to be your second line center. Like, you're not going to keep him on the wing. And you remember where O'Reilly was before he got hurt. He was the third center. I don't personally think that that's their best look. I think that they've looked never better maybe this year than when they had O'Reilly and Matthews going back to back. But I don't know. That's kind of where it feels like it's leaning, but who knows?
I go back to that Seattle game when they had O'Reilly.
Exactly.
Like, and they were so good and they dominated that game and he was a big part of that. And I don't know. I want to see that look in the playoffs.
Me too. And James, like I actually mentioned that. I just wrote about their lineup before this. So I don't know. I think it'll be out by the time this comes out. But I referred to that Seattle game exactly. And you look in that game, O'Reilly, Tavares, Nylander get them their first two goals. Matthews, Marner, Bunting get them the next three, and they win the game 5-1. Like, they just were impossible to stop.
Yarncroc is kind of screwing it up a little bit now because he's playing so well with Matthews and Marner.
Yes, and that's interesting.
And we've seen if you move Bunting down the lineup that he's just not as effective.
He's not as effective.
Yeah.
So well, and the problem, James, that I see is, like, if you're going to play Bunting, Tavares, Nylander, like, that line will, if I'm John Cooper, I'm targeting that line in Tampa. I don't know how you play that line in Tampa.
Well, that's what I was.
So maybe you have
the next
two
thing I was
going to
say. Yeah, the next thing I was going to say is that maybe at home you're loading up your lines, and then on the road,
I think it would be the opposite.
Yeah,
because if you load it up at home, I think the idea of if you load it up on the road, then you kind of insulate Tavares a little bit, and maybe Kampf is your third line center, and then you kind of and Chari is your fourth line center, and you kind of have four lines that you're okay with just about anyone coming on the ice.
I see.
And then in Toronto,
it's kind of like a safe play then.
Exactly. Just kind of protect him a little bit. But
that may be what they do. We've kind of seen that in the past where they've had different looks at home and the road in playoff series.
Yes, 100%. I did want to get your take on the D before we get to some questions. What do you think they should do? Like, I wrote about this, so it's like very top of mind, all the different things that they can do. I don't know if they should play Brody with Riley. I don't know if they should play Brody with McCabe. I don't know if they should play Liljegren. I don't know if they should play one of Shen or Gustafson. Like, honestly, like, it all kind of feels like it's in flux right now.
What do you make of the fact that they've been giving Gustafson such a run and, like, trying him on PP1? And, like, he's been playing more than I was expecting. I thought he was just going to be an extra in case there was an injury, but now it feels like Keefe is actually like looking at him and trying to decide whether he's going to be in his top six, top seven for the playoffs. Is there any chance they go 11-7 in the playoffs?
I think there's a chance. I mean, Keefe has said that there's a chance. Like,
yeah.
I guess that what I don't love about that is I think it's too big a departure from what they've been. Like, I do think it kind of messes with a lot of guys when you go 11-7. Like, I don't think the D actually like it. If you got them to speak about it honestly, you talk to former players who play D, they don't like it. It kind of fucks with your rhythm.
Well, lots of coaches
bit.
Like, don't like it either. Like, I mean, Keefe has kind of said in the past he doesn't really like it, right?
He has, yes. He's also, I believe, at one point, I think Mark Masters reminded me of this. Like, he went and spoke to talked to John Cooper about it, like, because that's something that the Lightning have deployed at times, obviously, mm-hmm. in winning their two cups. But I think the question about Gustafson is really interesting. He plays almost 18 minutes in Florida. Obviously, they dress 7D. He led PP1 with Riley not playing. He can do a little bit more watching him day to day than I initially thought. I wonder what that means, because I don't see a clear place for him. If they go with six, if they go with seven, like, maybe it makes a little sense. Like, he runs your second unit, he goes out for ozone draws with Riley, but I can't get on board with the 7D. I don't know. Maybe I need to be a little bit more flexible because there are parts of it that I do like. Like one of the things I'm going to write about it, so I'll save it. But yeah, I don't know. Do you see any validity to sticking with it?
The problem is with how they're playing right now. Like I think that all of the moving around and all of the absences and everything, that's what concerns me about 7D. Like I just feel like if they were playing better right now, I'd say, yeah, this is something that you can try in the playoffs. But it just hasn't looked right. So
yeah,
it's hard to sit here. The only question is like, okay, if you go with six, who are the six and who's with who?
Well, that's a good question.
And what do you do with Jake McCabe? And what do you do with, who does Riley play with? You know, if there have been games where I really liked McCabe with Brody, but if you do that, it kind of really, you're kind of screwing yourself on your other pairings, aren't you? Like there's not a lot of other things that I like. You can't play Riley with Hall.
And you can't really play Riley with Fullgren. Like that hasn't been great. So then it's like, well, do you play Shen? And then do you scratch one of Lilligren or Hall? Maybe.
This is the kind of, this is what they need to figure out over the last 11 games. Like this has to be locked in and settled here. Like I know that these games don't probably mean a whole lot to some of the players in the standings, but for the coaching staff, it's going to be really important that they finally settle on something here and lock it in.
Yeah. The one of the things that they haven't tried yet that you and I have message about is like maybe you try McCabe on the right side with Riley just to get a look at that, but at some point like you kind of got to let something marinate here, like you kind of got to build some continuity with McCabe. And like,
I don't think
even
I'd
for Riley, like
I wouldn't move McCabe to the right side right now. I mean maybe that's something you try next season or something like that, but
fair,
you don't fair. Like we're already talking about guys being out of their comfort zone already.
Yeah, and honestly, James, like one of the things that I worried about with McCabe and wrote about is like I didn't know if he was enough of an upgrade. Like he's not like you look at like really, really good defensemen, like top end, like even like Jake Muzzin at his peak, he could take a guy who wasn't great. Like Justin Hall is like a good defenseman, he's not a great defenseman, and he could make that pair go. Like that's how good Jake Muzzin was. And like even go back to that series with Tampa, and obviously he's playing with Brody, but he could take someone who wasn't quite as good and lift them up. And I just don't think McCabe is at that level. Like he's not in that bracket. And so I kind of think he needs to play with Brody, but then it's like, well, like the question you point out, okay, well, who plays with Riley? And so like, yeah, I don't know that there's an easy answer. And then it's like, well, you kind of want those two guys to play against Tampa's top line. Could you play Riley and Brody against Tampa's top line? Like, maybe. I don't know.
Well, who can you put McCabe with that you would feel good about playing against Tampa's top line other than Brody?
The other option would be Hall.
Yeah.
So in that construction, it would be Riley Brody, McCabe Hall, Giordano Lilligren, which I think is probably like their best six defensemen all in the lineup. But it's just a question of whether you're comfortable with one of those groups primarily facing Kucherov. I don't know.
I'm trying to pull up here.
It's interesting.
Who McCabe's been most effective with. I mean, we're dealing with pretty small sample sizes.
Well, it's Brody. I've looked at, well, actually it's not Brody. It's Lilligren. The numbers for McCabe and Brody so far are not great. Defensively, they're very good. So that kind of makes me encouraged, I guess, if I were the Leafs.
It's interesting that they're 11 games into adding these defensemen and there's the puzzle is like, the puzzle is like, it's like just out of the box and the pieces are everywhere. Like it's not, I feel like nothing is settled yet.
When was the last time you did a puzzle?
Oh man, I do them all the time now. My kids are into
it. Do you?
It.
I like puzzle,
I'm not a big puzzle guy, but the kids are getting into it. So yeah. And theirs are pretty easy. So it's like, it makes you feel good about yourself because it's not that hard. What's next, Jonas?
A break. Actually, no, wait. Before the break, I had this written down. Do you have any thoughts on Matthew Nyes? I believe Minnesota won on Thursday night.
Yeah, it looked like it was a nail biter.
So,
I mean,
I'll have to wait.
My thoughts are you get him into the regular season games that you can and you see what he looks like and you decide after that point. But it's going to be an awful lot to ask him to step in and, like, I don't think you can't expect him to be a difference maker. I think if he's playing, it's going to be in a depth role.
Why do you think that I was asking Josh this, so I'm curious your thoughts. Why do you think the hype for him has been so,
you know what it is?
It is, but you like know, it's so over the top almost.
It's been this way since I moved to Toronto. Whoever the top prospect is, whoever is like this, it was the case with Kadri. It was the case with Shen. It was the case with Robertson. Who am I forgetting? Like whenever there was been a top prospect, the only time that it was like less intense was when they, that year when they had a whole, they had like Nylander and Matthews and Marner, then it wasn't like all focused on one guy. But when it's one of these kind of, there's this fascination, not just with Leafs fans, but hockey fans in general, with a pick that wasn't like a first overall pick or wasn't a top five pick suddenly being a star. Like that's what everyone wants. Everyone wants like a Nick Robertson or a third round pick to become a Braden Point. And the Leafs haven't had a guy like that. Like that just hasn't been something that's happened here. But you can see there's a real desire for it to happen.
I guess what I'm saying is the hype doesn't really totally align with what he is reality at this point. Like, where do you think he ranks in the NCAA in points per game?
Well, he's not just like a big point. He's a power forward who scores goals. I mean, he's up for the Hobie Baker. So as a sophomore, so
yep.
I mean, it's not like he's not an impact player. Where does he rank in points per game? I don't know. He'd be in the top 20, I guess.
Yeah, he is tied for 15th.
Yeah.
But I guess the point is, James, like, he's not like destroying college hockey like Dylan Larkin did or Kyle Connor did.
Well, remember Cole Caulfield had that monster year, and then he stepped right into the playoffs with Montreal and made an impact.
Yes. Now, you mentioned the goals. Like, Nyes is, let's see, tied for 5th. In the NCAA goals, 21 goals in 36 games. It's like, I just think the likeliest scenario is he's not ready because it's a massive jump. He's going to be playing, like, he has an advantage size-wise in the NCAA that he just isn't going to have in the NHL. He would be jumping into the most pressure-packed of situations, like, possible outside of playing in, like,
yeah. Well, that's why you do the regular season games, Jonas, then, and they're going to be regular season games that probably don't matter a whole lot, and give him some opportunity and see how far away he looks. But yeah, the most likely scenario is that he's not going to be ready for the playoffs.
Yeah. Well, and like, you also have to think of like a trust kind of thing with Sheldon Keefe. Like, you're playing in Tampa, let's say game 3. Who are you going to trust to like not burn you? Let's say Aston Reese or Nyes. Like, you're probably thinking like Aston Reese isn't going to score, but he's also probably not going to be completely overwhelmed in that moment.
He's not going to Galchenyuk you.
Yes. Now, all that said, like, they could use another guy in their bottom six who can score for sure.
Yeah. So, even Bobby McMahon's hurt now.
Yeah.
It's looking a bit thin down there on the depth lines lately.
It is.
I think that's part of it too. Like,
for sure. Two injuries. And like, it was like, well, who do you play? Like, who is that 12 forward? Like, Wayne Simmonds is not really an NHL player anymore. So you're getting kind of thin. Anyway, let's take a break and then let's get into some questions. Okay, James, it is question time. It's pod bag time. I know you love
pod bag time. I didn't know if you were going to say it. I thought maybe I had scared you off from saying it again.
Nah, you'll never scare me.
It's funny, I got a text from my dad. I didn't realize he listens to the podcast that much because he's a Canucks fan, and he was just laughing about the pod bag conversation we had a couple episodes ago.
By the way, just as a side note, how many points do you think McDavid ends up with? So right now, as we record this, he has 138 points.
Yeah. Well, I hope he gets I hope he gets to 150. I hope he does.
It feels like 150 is like for sure. Like, he's got 10 games left.
The incredible thing for him is that his career high before the season was 48 goals, and he's just completely obliterated that.
Yeah.
He just like decided that there was a year where Crosby decided to shoot more, right? And he just like rang up like whatever it was, 50 odd goals.
Yeah, he won the Rocket.
Yeah. That's what it feels like. Is it McDavid's like, you know what? I'm going to take this.
And it's just, I almost don't think, James, like it's hyped enough just how insane this season is. Like, he's 28 points up on second place.
Yeah. I mean, it's going to be is anyone not going to vote him number one for the heart? Like, it's just going to be
if they don't, they should lose their ballot.
Yeah. I don't even know if I have a vote this year. I guess we'll find out. Did you vote last year? I think you did.
I did.
But I mean, that's going to be the easiest one ever is just to.
Well, I guess the question is who's like 2, 3, 4, 5. I haven't thought that far. Pasternak will be in there for sure, I think.
Matthew Tkachuk's had a really big year in Florida.
Yeah. He has.
I wonder what you do. The Norris is going to be the hard one. Like, what do you do with Erik Karlsson on a non-playoff team? It's going to be tough.
I'm not sure about if I'm going to vote Erik Karlsson for the Norris.
I feel like he might win just because, of, you know, that award sometimes
I
is kind of...
I think he will.
Yeah, it's kind of like a legacy award. And the numbers are so... His offensive production is pretty impressive.
Yeah, I was talking to one of the players about that, James, and they more or less said that it's still the other guys who still should be winning it, like Makar and like Yossi. And
Fox.
I think Hedman's McAvoy. Fox is, yeah. Hampus Lindholm, I think, deserves consideration.
Well, there's people are talking about maybe Josh Morris. He's getting some love. Yeah, in
that feels
Winnipeg.
Like a, one of those where a guy has a lot of points and goals for one random year. I got to look at it.
All right. Nicole says, is the sky falling in Tampa? They're 5-4-1 in their last 10 games. Same as the Leafs. I mean, the Tampa has not played very well either. I mean, that's the thing that it gets talked about less, obviously, in Toronto than... But, you know, the underlying numbers for the Lightning over the same period of time are not as bad as the Leafs. So, you know, I think that, you know, they're at, I mean, they're not great. They're hovering around 50% as well. But the Leafs are.
Yeah, but the difference is the Lightning have earned the benefit of the doubt. They've been to 3 straight cup finals and they've won 2.
Yeah.
They get a pass.
Yeah, and the Lightning beat them in the playoffs last year too, right? So too. I mean, like,
good call.
What do the Lightning have to play for right now, right? Like,
yeah, I mean, there have been like some warning signs, like the head coach scratching 3 of his star players for an entire period is like a pretty, like, that's an alarm bell a little bit. But you just think once they get to the playoffs, they've been there, they've done that. Yeah, it'll be I figure it'll be a close series, but obviously we have lots of time to talk about that.
Thomas has more of a statement than a question. He says, of the Leafs' worst 12 games for expected goals this season, 7 have come since February 24th.
Yeah.
They've had some real stinkers.
I don't remember a game, and actually there were a couple others this year. Like 93 shot attempts in Ottawa is insane.
Well, that game got away from them right away, too. I watched that a couple days ago when I got back, and like they were down... The shots were like 26-8 or something at one point, right?
Yes. Yeah, like
I was watching that game. I was like
Murray was outstanding.
What is going on here? I mean, Ottawa just lit up Tampa too. I mean, it's Stützle looks so good.
Yeah, they got something there going.
What's going to happen with the division? Like, if Buffalo and Detroit take another little step forward in the offseason, it's going to get awfully interesting here. Imagine Montreal gets Bedard in the lottery.
Yeah. Then the division gets interesting. I'm curious, honestly, to see. Obviously, we'll see what happens with Senators' ownership, but I would be curious to see what like a more competent management group would do in Ottawa, because like obviously they've built up some talent from being bad. I don't think that they've done the best job with a lot of that stuff. I would be curious if like you had someone better.
Curtis wants to know. It seems like we get this question every like few episodes. Is Ilya Samsonov pricing himself out of Toronto next year with how good he has played?
Well, he's an RFA, so they have control over him. I think that is very much forgotten sometimes.
Yeah, RFA with arbitration rights. And if you look at his arbitration case, which I have...
It's not going to be strong.
You know, I think it's like, you know, $3 million. You know, and usually arbitration, it's often... It has to either be a 1 or 2 year deal. Often it's only a 1 year deal. So, you know, they've got him relatively cost controlled for at least 1 year.
Mm-hmm. And then like... And honestly, I'm not sure I'd be comfortable signing him to some... long extension anyway. Would you?
No,
right?
No. So I mean, it's not the worst thing to do another short-term bet. I mean, with how Joseph Woll has played this year, I mean, I know the sample size is small, like part of me is tempted to like give and Woll, I believe, needs waivers next fall, so part of me is tempted to go Samsonov Woll next year and take your chances and find a way to move that Murray contract. I mean, we'll see. Obviously, it depends what happens in the playoffs, but.
Yes. That should be like the little asterisk on everything now.
Yeah, well.
depends on what happens in the playoffs.
It almost feels like we shouldn't have to say it because it's obvious.
Self-evident, yeah.
James is worried about Keefe getting out-coached by John Cooper in the playoffs like last year. What do you think of that?
I do think one of the, I don't know if sneaky is the right word. You love when I use the word sneaky. But one of the subplots of what's gone on the last few postseasons is Keefe has at times...
Overthought things.
Yeah. I think he's galaxy brain things a little bit at times. and then like at other points, like he's not like at some moments he's kind of gone too far. And then at other moments, like you kind of want him to do more. So that's one of the things I'll be watching in these playoffs, like to see how he modulates, because I mean, like you think back to like remember when Sandin all of a sudden was on their first power play and playing the playoffs. And then he had the terrible game and, he's just in like there was obviously the Columbus game where he puts Tavares on the top line all of a sudden, puts Nylander at center for the first time all year. Like there's just been all these little moments where it's like, that's not been great. And like he had its experience, right? Like I think that has to matter at some point.
Yeah. Tom wants to know, do we think that is there concern internally that the Leafs aren't meshing like they thought they would? Or are they okay with losing the possession battle as long as their defensive play is solid? I mean, publicly they're saying they're not concerned, but I think
I have a hard time believing they're not concerned.
Right? They don't want that to become the narrative, right? With 11 games to the playoffs, they don't want to put anything out in the media that they're concerned that the trade deadline makeover hasn't been working.
I was thinking about that though. Couldn't you say like, listen, like we're integrating a lot of new guys, we're trying some things, like we need to see who fits where, and like there have been some. Growing pains, and like that's to be expected. We made a lot. Like, couldn't you just say something like that? Like, you look as far as expected goal rate defensively since they made the changes. Is this 5-on-5? Yes, they rank 25th.
Cody has a weird question. You might know the answer to this. I do not. He says, "How much do you think Nylander wearing a tinted visor has helped him play the way he has this year?" He said he was getting headaches or something like that.
Yeah, that's exactly it. Like that was the reason he was doing it. Like he was. Yeah, that's really all there is to it.
When did he make the switch?
Before the season.
Yeah. Nicole, you asked lots of questions. Appreciate all the questions, everybody. Kind of late notice when I put the call out there yesterday. She wants to know, what do we think of Sam Lafferty so far?
I don't think he's made like a huge impact so far. I was obviously like a big fan of what he could bring them. I think he fits exactly what they need in the bottom of the lineup. What about you?
He can sure skate. I mean, you notice him when he like goes, he's a rocket out there. Feels like he could be like a top 20 player in the league for speed, like just straight ahead, like acceleration.
And he's physical and like he's competitive. And like, I think in the playoffs, I think he'll be a guy you'll notice. Like, I think he can maybe give them a goal or two in a series. Like,
but he's probably just like he's like a 10 minutes a night guy though, right? Like,
yeah. Yeah. But like, you remember like the 10 minutes a night last year, we're going to like Simmons and Clifford and Spezza at the end of his career. Now it's like Achari and Aston Reese, guys who can skate, guys who can be on the ice against anyone and just be okay. Like they didn't have enough guys that they could really trust this year. And they addressed that with, I think, Lafferty and Achari. I like Achari a lot.
Sometimes we get non-Leafs questions. We can take one of those. Ian wants to know, he says, when will the NHL realize it has a credibility problem with the extent of tanking occurring this year? No one seems to be talking much about it because we're focused on the playoffs, but you have to wonder how long certain fan bases will tolerate this. I mean, this is happening in every sport, right? Like tanking's become, I remember it being talked about in baseball, NBA.
It's happening in basketball for sure.
Yeah. This year in hockey, it felt like there was a lot of teams that were just like not interested in competing like right out of the gate.
Is it really that many though? Like, so the teams that for sure right out of the gate, Arizona, Chicago, Anaheim, Montreal. Montreal feels like more of a midseason tank.
Do you think Montreal thought they were going to be good at the beginning of the year? I don't think so.
No, but like they weren't like, I don't know. They
Columbus,
didn't
San Jose, Chicago, Anaheim, Arizona, all those for sure. Yeah. And then you get into like Philly and Vancouver and stuff. They weren't. St. Louis. I mean, St. Louis is 24th in the league. They weren't trying to be bad. And then you get into like Ottawa, Buffalo, Detroit, who are trying to, they're making a step. maybe a little step over last year, but they're making a step.
I think the most flagrant, like, if you want to call it offender, is Chicago. Like, they have some of the stuff they've done is just like they are. I mean, even something like trading like Brandon Hagel, who was like 23 and signed and good and cheap.
Well, look at what Chicago's done with the goalies. Like, they're just acquiring goalies no one wants. And like Khudobin, do you see the play Khudobin made where he just gave the puck away? And the commentary was like, oh, there's a little bit of the rust showing there. And it's like, yeah, well, like, he's like been in the AHL and he's like 38 years old or whatever.
Retaining McCabe for like two more years after this one is like.
You know what's wild is that Chicago's like really gone full battle tank mode, and there's two teams that are worse than them right now record wise.
Yeah.
I mean, Columbus, no one would have thought Columbus would be where they are.
No, that's true.
They make the big play for Gaudreau, and then they're dead last right now.
Well, and like San Jose, like, they're kind of screwed a little bit by the, like, some of the contracts that they have. Like, what are they supposed to do?
Well, San Jose and Anaheim's the same way too. It's like, you got no choice. Arizona. I mean, I've been surprised how much Arizona's been winning. Arizona has 15 more points than Columbus right now.
Yeah, that's wild.
Look at that roster. Like, that's I wonder if Tarigny, the coach there, is going to get some votes for coach of the year, because it's pretty impressive performance there.
It feels like Jim Montgomery will be like unanimous, no?
Could be. Do you think the NHL should do something more about tanking?
What can you do? Like, this is the problem the other leagues have encountered. Like, what are you supposed to do? What kind of rule could you have?
Yeah. But the problem is, if you're an executive, it's the Leafs were in the position, right, in 2015. It's like, the smart thing to do is to not be good.
Yeah. The stupid thing is to just try to be mediocre like Vancouver and just, like, spin your wheels.
All right. We got a couple more good questions here.
Although, James, Vancouver's heating up. But anyway, go ahead.
Yeah. Yeah. But they're getting, like, the dead cat bounce with the new coach in there, and then just in time to ruin their pick. It's tough too, because Bedard's a local kid. Like, if he went there, it would be huge. Right. Yeah. They don't deserve him though, with what everything that's gone on in Vancouver. Mark says, Jonas and James, predict whether Matthew Nyes is in game one lineup against Tampa. What would be the percentage chance you'd put on him playing in game one?
10%.
Yeah, I was gonna
maybe
say
that's even high.
I was gonna say 20. He's gonna have to be really good in the regular season. I think it's too much to ask for him to play in the playoffs.
So much.
Yeah. Curtis wants to know, which players have the most to prove in the remaining 12 games? Is it strictly the bubble players, like on defense, or are there forwards who are battling for lineup spots come game one? Who do you think has the most to prove here?
I think Hall, Liljegren, for sure.
Yeah.
I think Bunting is in a weird spot right now.
Yeah.
I think that's probably it. And then the goalies.
There's not really like a lot of shuffling that's happening with the forward lines, right? Because it feels like they're locked in on that Aston Reese line. And do you think there's still going to be movement there?
Yeah. I mean, even last game, they changed it a little bit. They still don't have anything like, I think, that you would say like that's locked in. I kind of like, I was thinking back, James, like, just go back to what we talked about with O'Reilly. I don't know why it kind of, well, I actually do know why, because it's not that interesting or that sexy, but like, Kampf was good as their third line center in that playoff series. He was like, they buried him. And if you look at like some of the underlying numbers, you look at, there was one game in particular, like that line basically won them the game. Like, I don't hate the idea of him being their third line center and Achari being their fourth line center. Like, I actually think that makes more sense than the alternative.
Well, I just like the way that O'Reilly loaded up with the big guys. Like, he just looked like,
me too.
He looked like he could hang with them really well.
Yeah.
There's a question about your story on Morgan Riley. If you haven't seen it, go to The Athletic, subscribe. There's actually a sale on right now. If you're not a subscriber, this is probably the best time of the year to get in. The sale is technically for opening day in baseball, but we'll just pretend that it's to read the Morgan Riley story that Jonas wrote.
Yeah.
Sam says, do you feel that Morgan Riley needs to exhibit better gap control?
Yes.
Yes. And he has for a long time. And it's something that feels like that only started getting talked about like last season, but it's been something that Riley has struggled with basically his whole NHL career.
Yeah, it's interesting. Like, I've thought a lot about this because like, you would think it would be, there are just some things that certain guys don't do well for one reason or another. You know what I mean? Like, that he's been in the league a long time. and he just makes unusual decisions. Like, I don't know why it's such a struggle for him, but then you think like there are some things that other defensemen aren't good at that he's good at. You know what I mean? It's just not a skill of his. It's not like you watch TJ Brody defend a rush and it's like, Jesus, this guy's a master. And then you watch Riley and it's like, it's still not a strength.
It shows that it's about more than the physical tools, because Riley's one of the best skaters on the back end in the league, but it's really about like almost like your processing speed and yeah, you're right. Brody might be one of the best in the league at it. I remember that rate when they first got him and he was, you know, lying in the middle of ice and like, he just reads what's going to happen on the play so well.
Yeah. I'm working on a story about him and I was talking to Justin Hall about it. He just said like his timing is just bang on.
Yeah.
And obviously you see that when he does like the little Brody slide. It's just like, that's not easy to do. You watch other guys try to do it. They don't.
They call it like the alligator. Well, the reason why guys don't do it is because you can look really stupid. Like if you don't do that properly, it's like, what are you doing? You're like lying down and they just go around you and score the goal. But he does it in a way that it smothers the play a lot of the time.
Yeah. He's awesome, man. Like he's become, that might be to this point, like Kyle Dubas' best signing. Obviously, you could go with some of the stars, like performing their contracts eventually. But man, like as a free agent signing, that's worked as well as they could have hoped. He's even better, I think, than they might have thought.
I think we've run through most of the questions. Any concern on your part with how Nylander's played lately? Because on the broadcast, they were talking about him a little bit before he scored his goal.
A little bit.
Yeah.
A little bit. I mean, the one thing that had been evident with him this year until this recent slide is like, the dips weren't like this long.
Right.
The dips were, and it's something I've talked to him a lot about. I actually talked to him, I was working on a story, and then this kind of happened. And it's like, one of the things he said is like, I want the dips, if there are going to be dips, to just be a game or two games and not be five and not be 10. And this has been like a few weeks where he's not skated as well. He's not shot the puck. He's not attacked the net. Like he doesn't look confident, honestly. Like, and so yeah, like it's a little worrisome. With the time of the
year. Well, it's tough because he did it for 60 odd games.
Yes.
All right.
And the other thing is like the other thing, James, I just would add is like Tavares has not looked. He had three assists in Florida and one really good pass to Michael Bunting on that power play goal, but like he's not looked the same either.
Yeah. So, yeah, he hasn't been particularly noticeable. Yeah. Got to get him back on the wing, maybe.
Maybe.
That's all I've all got. Right. That's all I've got for you, Jonas.
Well, go to theathletic.com/leafreport. It's only a dollar a month right now for 12 months when you subscribe. That's it. We're back next week. There's not a lot of games next week, so we got lots of time.
Maybe it's time to mix in a guest here. Keep coming with the guest suggestions for us.
All right, James. Well, it's been great having you back.
Till next time.